All right, hello, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of Nick and Garrett Get Serious About Jokes. I am Nick.
And I'm Garrett.
Yeah, and we're here every Wednesday to just kind of break down different things that we run into in comedy and just talk about them a little bit. Hopefully you can learn something or at least get some type of entertainment. We're two local Nashville area comics who are just, doing our thing. And as always, we are brought to you by Eastside Legal LLC. That's Eastside Legal LLC for your legal needs, whether they be whether they deal with bankruptcy law, criminal law, or tax law. The lawyers at Eastside Legal can help you out. And we are also brought to you by Cardin Illustration. The illustrators there, they've worked with the Ryman, they've worked with Bonnaroo, they do logos, they do all kinds of things. So whatever your illustration needs are, feel free to go to cardinillustration.com, talk to the artist there, and see what you can get worked out. All right, let's just jump into this, man. Like we talked about discussing F is for Family last week.
Yeah, man.
What'd you think about it, man? What was your initial response?
So for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's Bill Burr's, it's not just him, but he's a major, contributor. He's involved with writing, and he voices the main character. So in many ways, it's sort of his show, which was really interesting to me when I heard about it, because I already loved him as a comedian, so it was like, oh, let me see what this is about. It's basically set in, what is it set, in the
70s? Yeah, I would say mid-70s.
Yeah.
That's what I would, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's just a regular family. He's got this job at the airport, and, yeah, it's pretty, standard stuff, but it's, the way it does it is pretty different, and that makes it good, makes it, interesting, it's pretty great. I think it's, a lot of fun, but the one thing I really like about how he, deals with these characters, I think it's kind of an extension of how he feels about these things in general. Burr, which is the way that they deal with them is it's they're just normal people, but it's not something that's looked down on. I feel like most shows or movies or any sort of story that we tell these days are usually about this person's a super genius, or this person is super successful, and you get this feeling because it's the only thing you see, that it's if you're not super successful or some kind of super scientist or whatever, it's you're dumb or you don't matter. But that's not the case, because it's there's plenty of people that are just doing what they got to do. Maybe they aren't living their dream, but they're supporting the people living their lives. And I feel like that's sort of how he views these characters, and so it sort of comes through in the show and in the way of the challenges they have are legitimate challenges that have to be overcome, even if they're not anything super glamorous, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think one of the things shows kind of do, and I understand why, because you have to, certain plot elements have to, for certain things to work, the characters have to have some type of income or access to money, and it's not really talked about how they get it always. And even when, on shows when characters are supposed to be poor, they still have they still are able to afford things and do things that poor people shouldn't be able to do, especially if they live in New York City.
And they're living in a nice designer loft apartment that's really nicely designed and decorated, and they're man, I'm out of money.
Yeah. And it's that costs $1 million in New York, if that's where you live. Yeah.
Right.
And I feel like this show, and I think it's easier because it's a cartoon. You can kind of, you do more things. But, they really are this you know, working class, early to mid 70s family. And I feel like the show, because I was taking notes when I was rewatching it, just so we could, because I wanted to talk about some certain things. I do feel like it was a commentary on the 70s, as opposed to like an homage to 70s sitcoms, like the Carmichael Show, which is another Netflix show, is definitely a sitcom made now, or was made now before it was canceled, but it was in that 70s mold, like kind of an homage to that. Where this show is not, you know, it's not pointing to the 70s sitcom as much as it's talking about the 1970s. And like an example is when they are in that first episode, when the two kids they're neighbors with, that Bill and Maureen, his little sister, always get into it with, are like they're shooting each other, shooting BB guns at each other, and then they're like rolling each other down hills in barrels that are clearly dirty. And it's like showing this contrast between through then and now. And it's, I think it's supposed to be humorous. I mean, and it's not a contrast like this was bad. It was just, this is how it was, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And I like that. I mean, I think there is some commentary where it's very much better now. Like where there's the one character, Jim Jeffers, who hosts a show about black folks. It's like, it was like What It Is with Jim Jeffers. I'm your host, Jim Jeffers. And you're
Yeah.
And then he also hosts a show about feminism. Yeah. And he's like, hey, all of y'all are really hot. And it's just these things that's how it was in the
70s.
Yeah. But you can kind of tell, just, he doesn't have to say anything just by putting it there. It sort of speaks for itself. So I liked that.
Yeah. He doesn't like get on the soapbox and he's like, how bad it is that in the 70s there was shows about, you know, being black in America and they're hosted by a white guy. How terrible is that? It's just put in there as like, from our perspective, it's hilarious because of just how obviously like wrong it is. Like how obviously like, that doesn't make any sense that this person who doesn't know anything about this would be, you know, giving you information about it. And but it's not lingered on. It's just like used as like, look at how bizarre this is.
Yeah, like I feel like you don't have to get, like, even if you don't get the joke, it happens so quickly that I think you can kind of, you're not is nothing's lost. Like you're not, you know what I mean? Like it's not one of those things that it's a crucial plot point. So that was one of the things that I that I did like about it. I like cartoons, like cartoons for adults, but sometimes it takes a minute for me to get into them. Like I think King of the Hill is like that, and to me the animation kind of reminds me of King of the Hill, and it's hard for me to. I feel like if I watched enough King of the Hill episodes, I probably could have gotten into it. If I binged it, like from the beginning, like I did this show, that's a show I would have liked, and I think sometimes cartoons are really good for Netflix. Or, you know, at least for me, because if they're just on TV and you're just flipping through the channels and you see a random episode and you try to give it a 30-second chance, you end up saying, I'm not going to watch it, you know? So I like the fact that it's on Netflix, because I don't know if I would have given it quite the chance, even though like you, I love Bill Burr.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's actually kind of funny. Or sad, I don't know which one, that, like, most of the shows I've seen, I wouldn't have seen if it weren't for, like, streaming services like Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, with the way, you know, TV is and was, it's, like, it's so bad. Like, it was the only option for so long, but it was, like, you have to memorize a time that the show comes on, and then you have to turn on the TV, and then, you know, back in the day, I mean, there's only one or two TVs in the house, so it's, like, not confirmed if, you know, I'm going to get to watch it. It's just way too much work. But now it's like you can just get on your computer and it's all there and you can watch it, you know, at your own pace.
Yeah. And
so it's like way more convenient.
Yeah. And it also is curated for you. You don't have to search, and you know, through TV to you know, through the channels to find something. It's like, hey, based on what you've been watching, you will like this, or you're likely to like this. So that's helpful.
Yeah, and it was better before they took out the rating system.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
I mean, now it's like this thing matches you 100%, and basically, it's like you've watched comedy specials before. Here's another comedy special. And it's just not helpful.
Like, oh, I see what you're saying. I got you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, speaking of like TV stuff, like the one episode where he buys they're watching the fight and Frank buys the TV. That might have been the first or second episode. But when he gets the brand new TV and it's, I mean, you can see the excitement, but I mean, obviously. It's very 70s and even outdated as you're watching it, and that's kind of part of the humor in it. And I think that probably has happened on a lot of shows where there's the dad gets a new TV episode. But I don't know. I remember another episode with the sort of contrasting in technology is the Halloween episode where Bill and his friend are gonna. Stay home from trick-or-treating because they get threatened that they're going to get beat up.
Yeah, they're a bully.
And there's this scene where he calls his friend and they show him dialing all seven numbers on the rotary phone. And it takes forever. And there's just this, I don't know, just this humorous moment where he dials like six numbers and there's a pause. And then he dials the seventh. I don't know, it was just...
Yeah.
You have these funny moments, but...
Yeah, I saw that.
I liked that the show seemed to be very different from his stand-up in that, I mean, you know that Burr is doing the voice of the dad, and so you get that delivery, and you do get some of the type of Bill Burr, you know, language from the dad, but he doesn't, I feel like a lot of the stuff that he hits on in his stand-up, at least on his Netflix specials, he doesn't really hit on in the show. He doesn't talk about his life as a kid that much. He talks a little bit about his dad. So I like that you're getting this new side of Bill Burr in addition to his stand-up.
Right.
It's not just a show based on his stand-up. So that's good because he's not, I mean, obviously he's Bill the middle child, but he's not the main character.
Right. He's just sort of in it.
Yeah.
That Frank is the main character.
Yeah.
Frank. I think it's super interesting, like what you said, but also like I was watching, I think it was like an interview with him talking about, you know, making the show, and he was saying that, they were asking him about Frank, and he was like, yeah, it's basically just, like, all the people in the writer's room, like, we just put our dads into one character.
That's funny.
Yeah, so it's, like, just, like, anything that they would think of as far as their dad might say, they put it in this character, and it became this, like, this weird collection. So he's almost like an everyman, in a sense, because he's a combination of so many people from that time, I guess.
Yeah.
But it definitely comes through, like... I don't know. I think he's really good, and obviously Burr adds so much to his character by voicing him, so that's great as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, everyone does a good job. I mean, I don't know who all does the voices, but yeah. I mean, Burr's just his timing, and
right.
I mean, it just works so well. Like, I mean, I would watch just a live action sitcom with Bill Burr as the dad. You know. I don't think that's his wheelhouse, but I mean I would
at least I've seen him cameo on a few shows, but probably not a full show. But I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, meaning that. Well, one thing I want to talk about is that Matthew McConaughey that does the voice of the neighbor, right?
Is it?
It seems like. Hold on, I'm looking it up now. Matthew McConaughey. If it's, it seems like it.
I'm running his like lines through my head right now. Like, it makes sense.
No, voiced by Sam Rockwell. Okay.
Okay.
But the blonde-haired neighbor we're focusing mainly on season one, but season two, I mean, it goes way more into his drug problem and and everything. But I mean, this cool shirtless guy who seems to have too much money to be living in that subdivision, or at least in that cul-de-sac. But
yeah, it's like the show is like, I know this doesn't make sense for him to live here, but we want to have a foil to Frank, who's like this hardworking person that's not successful, so we're going to put this person who's super successful, mm-hmm. but he's just kind of fucks around.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he seems to be very, like it seems like he's always laid back and nice to Frank, but then there is a sort of a passive-aggressive one-upsmanship.
Yeah.
Like, oh, right on, man. But my TV is blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't know. It's just there's always these.
It's almost like he doesn't even realize he's doing it because he's, like, sold out to this idea of, like, being super carefree. But at the same time, just every once in a while, he's got to get those, like, little digs in.
Yeah.
So I think he's being super nice of, like, come look at my big-ass TV. But it's, like, subtly being, like, your TV's super small, dude.
Well, I know. And there's these moments. There's another one. The episode Bill's mom gets the job at Plasticware, or gets the job, the part-time job, and then her boss comes to the house, and Vic, the Matthew McConaughey character, he's standing outside, and he knows Bill's mom's boss. She's like, yeah, I was the lunch lady when you were in high school or whatever. And she's like, we used to, and then she puts up finger quotes, we used to clean the kitchen after school. And then he's like, yeah. And then he puts up finger quotes, you would fuck the shit out of me. And I just thought it was just funny because it was like everyone knew what she meant, but then he is like too stupid to.
Yeah, he's like trying to be discreet. He's like, yeah, like, or being subtle about this.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I don't know. I just like that. That was one of my sort of laugh out loud moments from rewatching the first season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my favorite like moment was 90% sure it's from the first season, but when he takes his son to the airport, his oldest son.
Oh yeah.
And they're having all those problems or whatever, and then his son sees how the woman is talking to him, and he's just like, "Shut the fuck up!" And then like he has that realization where he's like, "Dude, I'm sorry. Like your job is really hard. Like everyone treats you like garbage." I just thought that was a really, I don't know, it was like a really interesting scene to watch. The part where he's talking to the woman is super funny. But then afterwards, it's not, like, hilarious. It's just, like, kind of a cool moment because his son's, like, having seen his dad's job, he gains this respect for all the stuff he has to go through.
Yeah, yeah, no, there's, rewatching that, I definitely, it stuck out to me, these heartfelt, you know, family sitcom-y moments where you realize, you know, where they kind of remind you that, yeah, there's these conflicts that make the show, but ultimately they love each other and care about each other. And I like that moment as well.
Yeah. I think it's funny how you characterize it as sitcom-y because it totally is, like, it's a thing that just, like, happens, like, in most shows, but it's like, so weird to me that, like, it totally doesn't matter to me that it happens in all the show. Like, I'm a total sap for it, I guess. Because, like, I actually really enjoy those moments. If they're done well, obviously. If it's done, like, really cheesy, it's like, fuck off. But if they do it where they seem like, you know, some almost like people, in a sense, it's, usually pretty fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we hit on this a little bit last week that the more sophisticated audiences have gotten, the more subtle those moments have become.
Yeah.
And I like that they don't, because they kind of make fun of that moment too, because he, in the car ride home, he inadvertently goes on and on about how bad his dad's job is, to the point that Frank, the dad, turns up the Shire of Frodo music that he hates just so he doesn't have to hear him go on and on about how bad the job is. So it's definitely enjoyable to watch TV, because I remember feeling as if I had outgrown certain shows that I used to love, but they were still on the air. Like, I remember, like, just being like, I don't want to watch Family Matters anymore. Like, I just remember thinking, yeah, you know what, it's not funny to me. It's just too... So I just think that shows that, you know, just assume that there are certain things they don't have to explain or don't have to do are nice. Now, they don't always last because, you know, you got to sometimes walk people through the joke or whatever, or through the moment. But if they trust
you. That's a really great point. It's like there's another part of the show, I think it's in the first season, but it doesn't really matter, where, like, Frank is talking to his oldest son, and he's like, I get that you hate me, you know, I hated my, or I get that you hate me, or whatever, and his son's like, I don't hate you, and he's like, oh, well, I hated my dad, and, like, it's just, like, a really quick exchange, but it's a really nice, like, moment, but it totally wouldn't have the same impact if it was like, Dad, I know that you can be difficult sometimes, but I know that you care, and I love you, you know what I mean? It's like, if they explained the whole subtext, it would be so cheesy, and, like, you just wouldn't care because people don't talk like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, too, you don't... Well, I think the days of turning on TV to see how great everyone else's lives are is a little bit too 80s and 90s as well, and we've definitely done a nice job of moving away from that. Let's see. Let me ask you, what is your take on the 70s? I mean, neither one of us were alive then, but I mean, does that decade seem interesting to you, or? Because I hear mixed results from people about their attitude towards that time period. Like, I hear people talk about wanting to live in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's shit in our time, so I think it can be tempting to be like, let me just live in another time. But I feel like the problems that they had were, you know, just as big, if not bigger. And I feel like, you know, there's all sorts of social problems. Like, it feels very, like, very, I don't know what the word is, to say that this stuff is important to me, but it totally is, like, where just things were not accepted back then that today are, like, fine. Like there was obviously, like, the show touches upon how there's more, there's still, like, racism, although it's, like, in the 70s, so it's, like, the idea is, like, things are fine, but obviously there's still problems, and there's bigger problems than the ones we have today, so I feel like that would be tiresome to have to deal with. And then, you know, anyone that's, like, you know, LGBT is, like, I don't know, like, that's another marginalized group. But as far as, like, the, just, like, the attitudes about things, I feel like maybe people were more laid back. That's just my suspicion based off of, like, stereotypes I've seen from TV shows and stuff. But
yeah,
that's something that seems to be kind of interesting. But yeah, kind of, I guess a good answer, kind of, not I don't think about it.
No, I got you. Yeah, no, I just think it's, I feel like there's a lot of people who have like a nostalgia for a time period that they didn't live in, and yeah, I just was curious what your take on this. I like, for me, it just seems like there was almost a Wild West quality to it in terms of entertainment and life. Like there was, like you're getting out of the '60s, which was, you know, traumatic in its own ways with the assassinations and sort of, you know, upheaval of long-held institutions. And then in the '70s, those things were still going on. But there was like almost like a different PR campaign behind them where, you know, people were trying to like figure things out a little bit. Like, it was like, okay, I think of like Muhammad Ali was like, you know, he was vocal in the '60s, but the '70s was, I feel like, when he was like became this star and this hero, and he was loved, but he was also polarizing. It just seemed like there was a lot of the things that were happening in the '60s still happening in the '70s, but it was just. The soundtrack was a little different. Everything was in color, as opposed there was no more black and white. I've heard one of my favorite podcasts, Bill Simmons, talking about that he thinks the best time to have been famous would have been like 1977, 1978, because it would have been right before, you know, things like AIDS, like in the 80s, and before you knew how bad hard drugs really were. I mean, I think people knew, but like the stark realization and sort of the results of it that you see in the 80s, you didn't quite yet see in the 70s, at least on a large scale. And so almost there was like this carefreeness. Which I think is interesting. You know, you have Studio 54, you have the Roxy, you have all these. You know, of course, that's if you're famous. But I don't know. I'm kind of like you. I think that if we were to be transported to the '70s, I think we'd be shocked at how slow things moved compared to now, and how. How much downtime there probably was versus what is sort of shown on screen, on TV shows and films. But I will say, like, there's a new movie coming out that looks pretty funny. Hold on. The movie is called Black Klansman. It's supposed to be an undercover caper movie, but it's clearly set in the '70s. Spike Lee's directing it, and it seems like the '70s are a great decade for current writers to set a comedy. Like there seems to be this comedic tone to the '70s, even if you're dealing with serious things. That I don't know if it quite exists in the '60s because of all the assassinations, nor does it really exist in the '80s. Well, I guess the '80s you could probably do it too, but I don't know. I mean, anyway, I'm getting a little off track, but I just think that I don't know.
I see what you mean.
It just kind of got me thinking.
I hadn't really thought about how like slow everything would be, but. I imagine that that's probably the case. And I also wonder, like, if, like, families might have had, like, a better quality of living. Because I feel like there's certainly a number of families who it's like, yeah, the dad has a job, but the mom has a job, too, and they're also still struggling. So they both have jobs, and they both have to worry about, you know, are we taking care of our kids enough? And, you know, they have that guilt, and also they're still struggling with money. So I wonder... And obviously, I could be completely off on this, but I wonder how that plays out in comparison to now.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing. I know for a contract, I remember I used to teach this article that talked about, like, is the American dream dying? And, like, I would have students, they could either sort of argue that the article is well done or poorly done. And there's some things about the article that can go either way. But one of the things he talks about, the author talks about, is that in the 70s, there was this conspicuous consumption where people would buy, like, these gaudy, like, boats to go on the lake with, like, these, like, flashy sports cars that, you know, like people would buy Corvettes and not really be able to afford them, you know, and that still happens now. But I think it was probably the first time it happened on a large scale, where it's like someone in, you know, Bill Burr's neighborhood and on the show could probably, in theory, take home a Corvette that they can't afford and drive it around and make it seem like they can. Similar to the TV, how they buy the TV, but they have to finance it.
Right.
You know, and I think it's like the first time that that happens. And so there's, so it's like people are struggling, but maybe it doesn't quite seem that way, you know. But I know that, like, there were shows like The Jeffersons where you saw George Jefferson, he owned his own dry cleaning business. You know, this is a black man owning, you know, not having to answer to a white man for his job, you know.
Right.
So that show's going on. And I remember Russell Simmons saying, he was watching The Jeffersons and George Jefferson writes a check. And him being a little kid and realizing, oh, I thought only white folks were allowed to write checks. I didn't know black folks could write checks either. So you have that. But then you also have Good Times, which is – Good Times bleeds into the 80s a little bit, but there is this you see the lower working class black family struggling and being – living probably a very different life than the Jeffersons, you know. But I don't know. It's it seems like the 70s – I mean, and I guess, what, 40 years from now, people will be looking at – this time, you know, in probably in a similar light, I mean, where there are these huge contrasts, almost side by side, economic contrast, and maybe even in the same neighborhood, in the same cul-de-sac, we have people living very different lives, even though they live so close together. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what, you know, 40 years from now or whatever, people are going to say about this decade, because it's so usually just like a contrast, and it has so much to do with, you know, where we're at whatever time. You know, if things were different now, we would compare the 80s to our time differently. So it's interesting to think of, like, what people would think about, what would be the standout characteristics of our decade, you know, in the future, like years from now.
Yeah, I know. It would be interesting. I think part of it is going to be what art survives, which arts survive, like which songs make it, at, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now, which TV shows are still getting, are referenced, what movies, what celebrities sort of end up representing the time period to people who aren't, you know, who won't be old enough to remember the time period, even if they're alive now. I think that has a lot to do with it, like who survives.
I feel like one thing they'll say is, like, man, they really fucking loved superhero movies.
Like,
oh my god, it's to the point where, like, that's the only thing that's out there. Like, even movies that aren't about superheroes, if it's a guy who just has a gun and, like, 100 people are shooting at him and he kills everybody, it's like, he's a fucking superhero too. It's reaching that point where it's so huge. Like, 10 years ago, it was, like, in the thousands or whatever, it's, like, Spider-Man or whatever, and that was, like, crazy. Like, he's in real life, but it wasn't a thing that had really been done before, to the point where you've got this, you know, we've got Infinity War that just came out, and it's all these characters that don't make any sense together, and and they somehow put them in one room, and it kind of works.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy how big it's become. I've heard people compare it to, like, Westerns. Like, yeah. How Westerns were huge. Like, so many movies were about Westerns, and they just fell in love with this idea and this, like, place, this concept. And then eventually people got bored of it, and then this whole bubble popped, and, like, they stopped being Westerns. So I feel like that'll at some point happen. Like, it has to happen, I think, so that we can do new stuff. But I don't know when, but I feel like at some point there's going to be this bubble pop. People are like, we've done the superhero thing. Let's do something else.
Yeah, I wonder if there's going to be more of a backlash to almost a 90s style, like the protagonist is like this person to the people, you know, in the universe of the movie, to that person, you know, to those people, our protagonist is a loser, but to us, he's this winner, and it's almost like this backlash where the person isn't super in any way, in any discernible way.
Yeah, yeah, there's totally not enough movies or shows or stories like that, and I think those are so great when they're like, this person is a total failure, but... you know, that doesn't mean there's not an interesting story here, and that doesn't mean that he's not someone people can root for, because he might be, you know, more heroic because people can see, like, themselves in him, because I can see, you know, that's why I think we talked about this, I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but that's why, like, of, like, the Marvel shows,
yeah.
I think Jessica Jones is, like, my favorite hero, because, like, I can't resonate with Tony Stark, who's like a kid genius, and he's like a millionaire, and like he does all this crazy stuff that I couldn't do. But like Jessica Jones is just a total failure, like a dumpster fire of a person that has superpowers. And so it's like, for me, I think that's way more interesting. So maybe we'd see something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, and I feel like people, you know, are probably having some Tony Stark fatigue. Anyway, I definitely hear Jessica Jones getting referenced a lot. So
yeah, I think there probably would have been, like, you know, less interest already. Except that I feel like Marvel's pretty good at, like, changing and adapting so that things are still interesting. So like Guardians of the Galaxy, totally different. It's still like a superhero movie, but yeah. It's a very different feel. Then you have Thor Ragnarok, and you know. Just, you know, and then, like, they have the TV shows that have a bit of a darker feel to them. So I feel like they're doing a lot to make sure things don't get stale. Because I feel like, you know, when it got to, like, movies like Age of Ultron and Thor The Dark World, it was, like, getting pretty bland and boring. So it's interesting that they were able to course correct.
Yeah, I mean, it seems almost like the people in that room making decisions about what Marvel project to green light just think, I mean, just are very thought, like they, you know, like they're basically kind of like what we were talking about earlier. Like they are assuming that the audience is smart, and they're assuming that the audience isn't just smart, but sophisticated moviegoers and TV watchers, and aren't thinking, like, okay, if we put these three characters in the same movie, we're going to make this much money. Or if we get this star to sign on, they seem to be thinking beyond that. And, you know, I'm not as immersed in the Marvel Universe. I mean, I definitely, I've seen, I don't know, I'd say about seven of the Marvel movies, seven or eight, and watched season one of Daredevil. But it seems like it's a good, you know, genre. And I think with streaming and the internet, there's always going to be an audience for whatever you want to do.
Right. You know, yeah, like,
so,
sure.
So, but it's, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where sort of the next wave, the next big thing is.
Yeah, that will definitely be interesting. I think it's great that we were talking about Adams for Family and now we're talking about Marvel, like, movie trends, but...
I know, right? Well, but yeah, it's nature of the podcast. I'll put it in the pod notes. We'll, you know, it's a little bit of a heads up in case comic book stuff isn't your thing, you know. But I think it's, I think it'd be good. Like, now, we're at the 40-minute mark now. I'd say it's a pretty good place to end this week. We'll talk off air about what to watch, what to discuss next. But to you beautiful people listening in your car, you know, by a smoked firelight, listening on your laptop, this is it for this week's episode of Nick and Gary Get Serious About Jokes. But you can catch us next week. The what?
It sounds so, like, dark, like this is the end.
Yeah, I know, right? It makes it sound like this is the series finale, but it is not. No, this is just...
thank you for your patronage over these past 10 years.
Yeah. All right, well, we will end on that note. All right. Catch us next week.